Now, I'm going to go to probably my favorite guest on the planet. I just don't have him on often enough because I don't want to take up too much of his time, but he's a person I personally know and have admired for years, who's been really a key factor in much of the success that my company and I have enjoyed and my career has enjoyed because of his work. He, in 1993, wrote a book called The Great Boom Ahead that probably more than any other book had a profound impact on how I've managed my business and managed affairs over this time. He is currently editor of Survive and Prosper at HarryDent.com. By the way, folks, you can go to HarryDent.com and you can sign up for a free newsletter from Harry, and I suggest that you do that. And I am more than pleased to welcome with us this morning Mr. Harry Dent. Good morning, Harry.
Well, hi, Mike. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Listen, there are so many headlines this morning, and I just want to cover a couple of them with you because I'd like to get your response. Spain came out with an unemployment rate for the first quarter, the highest since 1976 at 27.2. And we had our conference last week, which, by the way, was great. And I remember the gentleman from Germany saying that in response to a question that if the Eurozone were to crumble, it would be based on one country. And he said Spain. So when I look at that this morning, it kind of shivers down my spine. How do you read that? Because it looks like it's a mess over there.
Well, you know, the funny thing, Mike, is that, you know, we look at demographics, and of all countries in the world, Spain actually has positive demographic spending trends for the next decade, and it's already in deep trouble. And the reason is they had the greatest real estate bubble in all of Europe. It wasn't just Spanish people buying real estate and speculating. It was the rest of Europe. People in, you know, England and France and Germany were buying vacation homes in Europe. In Spain, they had a real estate bubble that lasted 3 years longer than the U.S. and went 50% higher, and now it is bursting. So, yes, yeah, Spain is really actually more like in a depression, closer to Greece. And Spain is the country that's too big to bail out, too big to fail, and is most likely to trigger the next crisis in Europe. But of course, that's not the only thing. You've got Japan in an endless downturn, and China has the biggest real estate bubble of any country in the world. So you know, all this quantitative easing is just going to kind of stop these bubbles from bursting. At some point, they're going to burst.
Well, now, and speaking of China, you know, there's been a lot of concern over China, and it seems to have slowed down, although it seems to be holding here around 7%. Do you think it will continue to hold, or are you looking for China to weaken further?
Okay, first of all, Mike, I was just in South Korea giving a second lecture there in the last 6 months, and there was a professor of finance, one of the most respected people in China, lecturing there saying China is not even growing at 8%. It's totally fiction. They may be growing at half that rate at best. They've been building infrastructures and housing for nobody, which we've documented for 2 or 3 years now. The thing is, this guy got up and justified all the figures we've been saying. China has been overbuilding everything. The 24% of houses are vacant. You know, they got 40-50% over capacity in steel, cement, things like that. They're just building stuff for nobody to keep their economy going, and it is the greatest bubble in history. So, you know, China may or may not be the last country to fall, but when they do, it's going to be massive. It's going to be a hard landing, and commodity prices are creating a vicious cycle where commodity prices are falling. That hurts emerging countries and their exports. Emerging countries are now buying more than ever from China. And when their imports from China go down, China goes down and exports and commodity prices go down again. So actually, I'm starting to wonder if China and the emerging countries with the commodity prices, you know, collapse, are not going to trigger the next crisis. I don't think it's going to be the U.S. We're doing okay, not great, with $2 trillion stimulus a year to create $300 billion in growth, which is a horrible ratio, but we're doing okay. I'm more worried about Europe, China, Japan.
Now, when you're saying we're doing okay, you know, it seems to be a lot of disconnect in the stock market. A guy named Michael Rourke this morning, He wrote an article in the closing print for Jones Trading, and the headline says, "The market has dropped any pretense of being connected to economic reality." And I think that seems to be a theme that you have espoused quite a bit over the last several years, is that this market is not trading anywhere near where it should be, and only 19% of the S&P 500 this year have top-line growth. Is this market going to continue? Or I think you're one of the economists out there that are really looking for a rough patch ahead. And aren't you predicting somewhere out there that we may go back to 2008 levels?
Yeah. I think we're going to go back there or lower in the next several years. What you have here is a market that's being pushed up by $2 trillion, $1 trillion a year in fiscal deficits and $1 trillion a year in quantitative easing, monetary stimulus. And that $2 trillion is only getting us $300 billion or 2% growth, which is horrible. I mean, I always ask audiences when I speak, if we didn't have this $2 trillion of stimulus, where do you think our economy would be? And the answer's got to be, we'd be in a downturn, not in an upturn. So this is stimulus-driven. And yes, and even now, there's more signs that the economy's slowing despite massive QE in the last several months. The market still keeps edging up. Why? The government's pushing money in the economy. It's going into investment and speculation through the banks, and it keeps pushing markets up. But we see strong resistance at 1,600, you know, 0.5% below where we are today on the stock. We may break above that and see 5 or 10% higher, but we think by the summer, not yet, we're not showing signs yet of a top, but we think stock market's going to top this year, probably somewhere around June, July, August. And yes, we've seen higher highs on every bubble since 1995 rally, and every time we've crashed, we've gone to lower lows. So the next target's 5,000 to 6,000 on the Dow.
Now, are you looking for that 5,000 or 6,000 number sometime in 2014, 2015? Is it just going to kind of slowly work its way down? I don't see any impetus out there to have that precipitous drop off like we had in 2008, which was really a train wreck because we found out so many things that we thought had value in these derivatives did not. Are you looking for a more organized retreat in the Dow?
You know, there could be two things. We've got two scenarios, Mike. One is that we start to see a slowdown in the world economy again later this year, early 2014, and stocks start to collapse. But the Fed's going to be there. You know, the ECB, you know, central banks are going to stimulate if we see that. You know, maybe they stave off and we only get a 20, 30% correction, then we rally into 2017, and then we go down. All we know is that the demographic trends, especially in Europe, get very, very ugly after 2013, 2014. We could see a major crash if something goes wrong in the next few years. A danger cycle is in the early 2015, or it could be more like 2018, 19. One way or another, we're going to see a major crash.
All right, Harry, when we come back, I want to talk to you about Japan and how that is a leading indicator for us. So stay with us, folks. We've got Harry Dent. We'll be back to you in just a moment. Welcome back, folks. We are fortunate enough to have with us today editor of Survive and Prosper, Harry Dent. Go to harrydent.com and sign up for his free newsletter. For over 20 years, Harry has been using known economic and demographic trends to predict major economic and market shifts with uncanny accuracy. I talked to you about it in the opening this morning, about the book that I read back in 1993 and the profound impact he had. The number of predictions he had back then, that he was absolutely right on target. You know, most economists focus on short-term trends, policy changes, technical indicators, elections, things like that. You know, those are volatile, they're unstable, and they can change the day-to-day. Harry focuses on long-term trends, demographic, business cycles, human behavior patterns. Those things don't change, folks. We've talked about it many, many times. They don't change. You're going to go through sessions of life where you're going to do the same thing, and you're going to spend the same way. And those are some of the driving forces of our economy. But, you know, Harry, most people miss all this. And that's what I've, Yeah, ever since I started work with you back in the 90s, it has always confounded me why most people miss this, why most of the talking heads, yeah, they'll give a nod to demographics every now and then. Morgan Housel wrote a great article this morning, folks, if you want to go to The Motley Fool, Three Countries with Awful Demographics. And in that article, he says the same thing that Harry's been saying for years. Harry, why do most people miss all this?
Well, because they're idiots, number one. But, you know, I always use the iceberg analogy where everybody looks at the tip of the iceberg and nobody looks under the water where 80 to 90% of the iceberg is. Demographics are the future. I mean, the boom, we show people peak at age 46 and spending in countries like the United States. The boom from 1983 to 2007, which we predicted way back in the early 90s, was simply a 46-year lag on the birth index. I mean, how simple can you get than that? A 10-year-old could understand this. But nobody looks at it. Everybody says, well, it's the Fed. It's monetary policy. And, yeah, those things do matter short-term, and they matter more now than they ever have because the Fed's putting in $2 trillion in you know, the government fiscal stimulus and $1 trillion in monetary stimulus just to keep this economy from falling on its face. We're done. We had the greatest boom in history, which we predicted, and the greatest debt bubble and financial bubble in history, and it's now starting to fail, and governments are desperately, and now Japan is stimulating it 2.5 times the U.S. just to keep them from going into a depression. So you got to say, look, the trends are not good. They've been good for a long time. They will be good again a decade from now. But right now, stocks are going to go sideways to down for the next decade. We predicted this, again, decades ago. We predicted that the economy would peak around 2007, roughly. And central governments are just fighting this. So you got to understand that all this stuff on CNBC, all this debate, it's all about people talking up the bubble. The government's trying to keep the bubble going to keep banks from collapsing. And people are actually, I hate to say it, people are crazy. When a few people do something weird, people think, oh, they're crazy. When everybody is speculating in tech stocks and then real estate and now in emerging markets and everything else in bonds, everybody thinks, oh, this is okay. Even Warren Buffett thinks this is okay and the government's doing the right thing here. This is suicide, what we're doing. The governments around the world are trying to deal with a debt crisis, the biggest debt crisis in all of modern history, by adding more debt. How much sense does that make?
Not a lot. Now, in your current book, The Great Crash Ahead, you call this the winter season. And frankly, since it's going to snow in Denver this weekend, we're in the winter season, and what are the characteristics of the winter season? And the average investor out there, because this program is being broadcast across about half of America now, and we have a lot of investors listening. What does that mean to the average investor? How do they prepare for it? And where are the best places, do you think, to invest in this winter season?
Well, you know, long-term, over a human lifetime, about 80 years, you get spring, summer, fall, winter. Look at inflation like temperatures, high inflation in the 70s, falling inflation in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and now deflation into the 2010s, just like we saw in the 1930s, 80 years ago, almost exactly. You see a bubble boom in the fall when new technologies move mainstream, like in the roaring 20s and in the last decade or two. That bubble then burst with all associated with it in the winter season. And the winter season is a difficult season, but it's great for the economy. It deleverages debt. It forces businesses to get radically more efficient after an innovation boom in new business models and shifts the economy into a new gear. But it is a season of austerity. And everybody's acting like, oh, austerity, oh, it shouldn't hurt. We shouldn't have austerity in Europe. Hey, look, the countries like Estonia and Iceland that went through austerity in the last few years are growing again while the rest of Europe is sinking. Japan never went through the winter season because they didn't let their banks deleverage debt. And they've had constant QE like we're doing. And guess what? They're in a coma economy. Japan has grown at 0% for 2 decades with zero inflation. They're in a coma on life support because they refuse to go to the winter season. The winter season is difficult. It's good. Now, the key thing for investors like Joseph Kennedy in 1929 when he sold stocks and rebought in the early 30s, when things fall, financial assets are the bargain of your lifetime. And so if you're more in cash and defensive, when the winter season occurs, you get the greatest investment opportunities of a lifetime. And again, governments are trying to prevent this, but we think they're going to fail. We think in the next couple of years there's going to be another stock crash, and certainly in the next 5 to 6 years, a major crash in stocks, real estate, everything. Again, investors who are smart and see reality and are not in la-la land like all the people on CNBC are going to get unbelievable long-term investment opportunities. But you got to be in cash and be defensive. Otherwise, you don't have the ability to take advantage of it.
Right. And speaking of Japan, you mentioned Japan, and you and I have talked about this a lot, and it seems to be getting a little more press now, is that are we following Japan? I was looking at the charts from the conference last week, and you went over a lot of things about the correlations between the United States and Japan. If we're following Japan, doesn't that not bode well for us, considering that they've had, zero interest rates for 2 decades, and they have an aging population that has really put them in very severe distress over there?
Yeah, Mike. I mean, we call it the demographic cliff. Japan was the first to have a large generation, the baby boom peak, and then a decline in spending, and then a smaller generation follow. And you know what? Japan's real estate, not only did stocks peak in 1989 near 40,000 in the Nikkei, and only recently have they rallied, and that's not going to last long, but I mean, they were down 80% just last year, 23 years later. Real estate down 60% and has never recovered 21 years after their peak. Japan went off the cliff. Now the United States and Canada were next in 2007. Europe, who is in deep trouble today, doesn't go off the cliff until after 2013 or 14. If they're in this much trouble today, when their demographic trends finally turn down, they're going to be in even deeper trouble. So this is something that's happening around the world, from Japan to North America to Europe to even South Korea, goes off the cliff last in 2018, and then China after 2025, the only emerging country to see slowing demographic trends will be China, and they're the second largest economy in the world. So how are we going to grow even with endless stimulus with this demographic cliff? But Japan was the example. They did everything first. They had the real estate bubble. They had the stock bubble. It crashed. They did QE now for almost 2 decades. They haven't come out of it.
Hey, Harry, I'd love to. Can I get you to come back on? Because I got to wrap up the show. I want to thank you for coming on and for all the information you shared. Folks, thank you for listening. Great to be with you today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you. Have a great day. God bless.